of soul.
This is Bass Talk Live. Your host, Mark Jeffries and Matt Pangrack. BTL is brought to you by Lowrance, Lose, Strike King Lures, Bass Cat Boats, Duckett Fishing, Spro, AFCO, Sunline, and TH Marine. BTL coming at you. Good Tuesday, everybody. Welcome once again to BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. In studio, once again, Mr. Bradley Hallman. And Matthew, it's a little chilly out there today.
It is. It sucks today. It was nice yesterday. You got it figured out, Brad?
I don't have it figured out.
Okay, Brad's trying to figure out how to watch it live. He wants to watch it live on YouTube. So what do you...
Well, why do you want to watch it live?
He's just interested in seeing how it works so he can, like, share it and stuff.
It's just funny, man. There is a...
Here we go.
There is a seasoned veteran. I mean, one of the greatest coaches of all time in Oklahoma, Coach Cobb. He was at East Central. This is a funny story, just real quick.
Okay.
He said the head coach at Blanchard now used to be an assistant with Coach Cobb at East Central.
Okay.
And Coach Word asked him, do you want to watch film today? And he turns to him and he looks at him and he goes, why the hell would I want to watch film? I was there. I saw the game.
Well, he was just trying to share it.
Yeah, I was just wanting
because
to see
it didn't pop up. So what happens is when you go live, it pops up that we're live, right?
Yeah.
And then if you have the little bell, it says, hey, BTL is live, yeah. And then you watch it, and that's the way you watch it through YouTube, or you can go to the website, or you can listen to the replay on iTunes. So we're rolling, and it's 2 days in a row with Brad Hallman.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So, Bradley, greatly appreciate it. I know the fans love having you here. So, as always, you are welcome anytime. All right, a ton of stuff to talk about. I want to let everybody know we will have Brandon Cobb on live via Skype here in about 15 minutes. But all kinds of things going on in the bass fishing world, Matthew. The first thing I want to mention, just a tragic event that took place on Lake Guntersville.
Yeah, we were talking about this after, and there had been some comments, and I did some research. It appears as though one of the kind of established docks there in the north end of the lake that had a lot of residents who actually kind of lived in those houseboats caught fire. I'm not sure. I know that there were several confirmed fatalities.
Yeah, the last count was eight.
Eight, and people getting rescued, having to jump in the water, and just a horrible deal. I mean, you are actually really familiar with that kind of area of the lake and that kind of row of docks, Brad.
Well, when I saw the picture of the docks, I know that it's a place that I flipped before and caught some nice fish, you know, in tournaments there. But yeah, it's very unfortunate and sad deal. It's amazing fiberglass, you know. That's one thing I think about when we go offshore, you know, like with Crete, and you're going 200 miles out there marlin fishing. That's like my worst fear. Seriously,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
It's like fiberglass burns like kindling once it's lit, you know. And it's a scary thing, and it obviously just wiped out that whole.
It's Marina. Just something you never think of, because I've always thought, you know, I've always thought, man, it'd be kind of cool to live on a houseboat there, you know, like at Murray or Grand.
Dude, that used to be my dream. Like, that was my dream when I was a kid. I was like, I'm just going to get a houseboat. I don't have to mow grass or anything, live at the marina and just park the boat next to it and fish every day. But, yeah, sir, very, very flammable and tragic situation.
Yeah, just a tragic story there. It was north of Goose Pond, wasn't it? A little,
if it's the marina that I think it is, it's not that far north of Goose Pond, but it's just up from Goose Pond, still on the same side of the lake as Goose Pond.
Yeah, I looked it up on Google Earth.
There's a big campground there that a lot of the guys usually camp at and stay during tournament events. The guys that camp on tour, that's one of the big places they stay, is right next to that marina.
All right. So our thoughts are with all the people that have been affected by that. All right. I failed to mention yesterday, movement sponsor-wise, you know, we don't see that much right before the season starts, but there was a press release that came out, Matthew. Pretty big news for Gerald Swindle going with AFCO.
It was. I saw him. He was like laying down with the jacket on and had all the clothes around him and stuff. But yeah, big move for G-Man. I mean, we've seen him makes several big moves. He's wearing new clothes.
New reels.
And a new reel. Is he in a new boat?
New boat.
New boat, new reels, new clothes. He's going to show up and people are going to be like, and what's your name? Like, nah, don't recognize
him. I think they will. So a lot of movement there for the G-Man with the logo design on the jersey. And best of luck with him with all the new sponsors that he has. All right. The other thing, there was a message that came through the instant feedback yesterday, and it was concerning Red Crest with Major League Fishing. And I didn't say anything about it because I didn't know anything about it.
Well, you did. You said something about it, but you didn't say what it was.
I mentioned it was Red Crest, but right. I didn't know exactly what this viewer was referring to. So as we like to do, Matthew, we're not going to comment until we find out what the scoop is and what the story is. You go, you obtain factual information, and then you report on it.
Brad did a little homework. He called me. He's like, I've been scrolling through what this viewer said. He's like, I found it. I found where it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So on Ike Live, there was a sequence of which, let's just say, Ike got a little, what, informative maybe? Emotional?
Got a little excited, for
excited,
sure.
Excited? Mm-hmm. When they started discussing some of the things that were going to take place in 2020, and then it was mentioned and could have been implied that there was not going to be a Red Crest in 2020. So yesterday, I reached out to Major League Fishing for an official comment about this situation. And right here, Matthew, I have the official response from Major League Fishing in my hand. It's not that long, couple paragraphs. I'm going to read it. All right. And this is in reference to the comments that Mike Iaconelli made on Ike Live. I believe it was Sunday night, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. It was, they had the big bait posse and all this stuff on, but there was like an hour segment kind of before, kind of like the pre-show before all that starts, and it was an hour long, and he talked about what was going on, and this was in it about 20, 25 minutes in.
Yeah. All right, so here is the official statement from Major League Fishing, and I quote, "The top 30 anglers ranked by points from the 8 stages of the 2020 Bass Pro Tour will qualify for the 2021 Red Crest, the Bass Tour Championship. Red Crest, which debuted in August of 2019, will continue in the spring of 2021 and return annually each spring thereafter as the Bass Pro Tour Championship. No 2021 dates or locations have been announced at this time. Red Crest is a 5-day tournament format that features a 30-angler qualifying round during days 1 and 2. The top 20 anglers at the end of the 2-day total qualify into one of two knockout rounds, which feature 10 anglers each on days 3 and 4. The top 5 anglers of each days 3 and 4 will qualify into the 10-angler championship round, day 5. What's so funny?
I just think we need a board game or some sort of game that's like the format.
Yeah. All right. So let me keep going here. Just two more paragraphs. In 2019, Red Crest payouts totaled over $745,000, including Big Bass Awards, with a minimum payout of $6,000 for places 21 to 30. Incremental payouts for places 2 to 20, leading to $300,000 championship purse. So the winner got $300,000. All right. Last paragraph. It says here, the lack of Red Crest in 2020 created the opportunity for the heavy hitters this May 16th through 20th, 2020, on the Kissimmee chain, or what I refer to as the K chain.
The what?
The K chain.
He's trying to get this thing where no one calls it the Kissimmee chain. He's trying to just get it to be called the K chain. He's K-chain. Been on it since like a week before the Open.
Okay.
Here it's kind of like the Matt Matthew thing. He's trying to make the K chain stick.
All right. I'm
all right. This MLF test event gives the Bass Pro Tour pros a chance for nearly $750,000 in total payouts in a single event in 2020, since Red Crest will be shifted to 2021. All right. And then I was told that there's going to be an official article?
Announcement.
Story announcement on the Major League Fishing website. So bottom line right here, folks, from the source, there is no Red Crest in 2020. It will be moved to the spring of 2021.
But the guys are still fishing for the 2021 Red Crest in 2020.
Correct.
So they're still fishing for Red Crest.
Is that right? Is that how that read?
Yeah.
They're going to have a 16-month gap between Red Crest, and they're going to put a lot of emphasis on heavy hitters this year.
Yeah.
Is there any other big events in the spring? Like championship events in the spring, Brad, that you can think of?
Why you got to go there, man?
Can't imagine what that'd be.
Yeah. So, are they going to schedule on top of it? Come on, guys.
I don't know, man.
There's no way
like,
they would do that.
Where do you go?
We're all growing the sport, but yet we're going to.
Where do you go? Do you go before or do you go after?
Go right on.
You go on top of it?
Oh, yeah, right on top.
Where do you think?
Why would you do that?
Where do you go? Before or after, Mark? What do you think's the better bang for the buck there?
Probably before.
Before the Classic.
Yeah. Probably before.
I mean, there's a lot of dead time in January. I mean, you're limited on where you could
very
go fish.
Limited. Very limited.
So if they're wanting to do the big stuff, it would have to be within several weeks of.
I was always a fan. I mean, we're going back. But I was always a fan of the late summer classics, you know, the August. It just opened up the country to where we could go to. And, you know, like the Pittsburgh Classic. I mean, that's one that I remember, like, vividly in my brain. And I know the fishing was terrible, but it made the competition incredible.
I like the grind of the Forest Wood Cup. I mean, yeah, they kind of stuck around some of the same lakes to where it kind of got repetitive some, but I mean, you're around those guys. You talked. I mean, that is a grind. I mean, you're going out.
I just like
out.
That time of year. You know, kids are out of school. It's easier to get them to the expos and to the event, and it's just my opinion. I understand started off at the beginning of the year. We Bass changed that a long time ago, but I've always liked it in the summer.
Yeah. Now, when Bass
agree,
did
Bradley.
It, they actually
like it
did
the
two classics.
I like it at the end of the year.
Didn't they do two classics? The one that Luke Clausen won, and it was the 05-06, wasn't it, Mark? Where they did two classics in, like, they did one in the summer and then one in the early spring,
yeah,
and then
won
it with early spring. So I think wasn't Clausen the
– Clausen was definitely an early spring tournament.
Yeah, but who won in that summer then, the summer before that?
Wow, I don't know.
Anyway.
I can't remember
off
the top of my head.
There was just
Talk
one,
a Hero? Square Bill?
Yeah, I might have
like,
been. I can't
Wiley,
believe I'm kind of
Wiley.
Embarrassed to know that we mentioned Ken Duke beforehand. He's sitting there. Well, I would say he's pulling out his hair to know the answer, but
that's cruel.
I think that's what
Matt.
It was.
Was
I think it was talking talk,
Yeah, but he was only the champion
it
for
It was the last
months.
Minute win, you know, the square yeah, bill yeah. up
I
the
knew
river.
It. The three fish and five casts. He's like, we got to go.
I think that's right.
I don't know. You can look it up real quick. Somewhere. Anyway, so there you have it, folks. There is the official release to BTL on the discussion of no Red Crest in 2020 being moved to the spring of 2021. So we'll see. We'll see. Somebody on the instant feedback says the U.S. Open needs to be moved back to the summer.
I've heard the stories about the summer U.S. Open. I don't know if I want any part of that.
I disagree with that. Completely disagree with that.
That was really when Rick Klund said it was the most grinding, most brutal 100. Tournament in the history of bass fishing.
I can't imagine. Just the heat out there just smoldering for 2 or 3 days of practice and then a 3-day event to just .
Yeah. One other thing, I did ask the question to our contact at Major League Fishing, whether or not there were going to be any ramifications toward Mike Iaconelli for his comments, and there was no comment on that subject matter. So I have no idea if there are any repercussions that will go down on Mr. Iaconelli because of his statements. You know, freedom of speech, man, I guess. I don't know. But there was no comment from Major League Fishing on whether or not anything would happen to Mike Iaconelli for his statements.
That was a team effort. We had a viewer that wrote in. Brad went and did the research, found what Ike said. Jeffrey's emailed
which,
MLF,
by the way, was like
answered.
A three-hour podcast.
Yeah.
And I was expecting it to be at the end, so I start towards the end, but then they had some really top-notch guests that they did. I loved hearing that, so it didn't really matter. So I went back and listened to all the swim bait stuff that those guys out in California were doing. And then I went back to the beginning and finally found it where I was going off.
You're not a swim bait guy, are you? I've known you a long time.
No, but just the story of those guys, you know, that they're the ones that started all. That's what that show was about. And just the stories of how those guys, you know, they were young guys and how they would attack a lake. And they were just like a big underground mafia group that were just ate up with fishing. Like, they would party all night long and, like, still knew they were going fishing in the morning, like, and everybody would roll. And sharing techniques, baits, and how they would quit eating a swim bait, and they'd think the bite was over, and another guy would figure out another technique or another bait, and it'd just fire right back up. Dude, they're catching 10-pounders. Like, we catch 4-pounders. It's really cool stuff.
Did you have a group like that when you were rolling, like, in your
early days? You had to have a group of kids that you'd, like, skip school with and stuff to go fishing. And yeah.
All right. By the way, man, the people want to see your beautiful mug there,
Jeez,
Bradley.
We need like a definite second camera angle. Or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know. If you want to see Brad's mug, I'll throw the plug in right now. YouTube video just dropped. Brad's really pumped about it.
Yeah, dude, I'm getting better at it. Like, I was terrible at the beginning, and like, it is hard to sit and talk to a camera by yourself without feeling like an idiot. And like the chesty deal that we talked about, I mean, I can't wear that thing. And so, but I'm getting better. I'm getting better at talking to the camera. I'm getting better at editing. The deal is that I enjoy it. That's the bottom line. I actually like it. Like, I can't believe that I like it at 40-something years old. I never thought I would like that thing. Yeah. Never thought it would be something I'm interested in, and like, I'm really into it right now.
Brad Holman Fishing, so it's kind of your wrap-up stuff.
A couple guys that I'm rolling with, Castledine, you know, Todd and Upshaw, they're both really into it right now, so we're kind of all feeding off of each other. And
cool.
It's really cool.
One of the things we're talking about, though, is, I mean, you aren't fishing the FLW tour.
We are not on tour. All three of us are in the same situation. Like, we're not on a tour, so we have to come up with different ideas. But then we all three kind of have this interest, and it's really cool. So
it's interesting right now in the sport market. I don't want to get off on this tangent. I know we got to get to Brandon Cobb.
We're good.
Probably busy having another top 10 finish in some pond tournament.
Top five.
But it's interesting, you know, you've got a bunch of guys here, you know, to talk Scott Martin, the guy sitting next to me, and Latimer. There's all these anglers that are trying to figure out where they fit into this big picture of professional fishing right now.
Yeah. We're just all trying to find a niche somewhere.
Yeah. By the way, I want to mention on Monday, we have a guest lined up, Ryan Salzman. Yeah. FLW Circuit Pro. You set that up, Matthew.
Yeah, he was on. He's a guide there at Pickwick. Catches a heck out of them at Pickwick, but made the top 10 in the last Forest Wood Cup, the one that Thrift won. Had a rough go in the first tournament, but I was actually in the World Series of Bass in 2012 with him. Mm-hmm. That was there on Grand Lake, and it's kind of crazy. There's like 6 of us out of the 8 that were randomly selected that are either full-time professional anglers in the industry in some capacity. So he's got a YouTube deal going, does some stuff on the podcast, guides full-time, fishes on the FLW Pro Circuit. He's on Gunnersville a lot too, so he might be able to give us some more information on what's going on in that kind of area around Alabama. So kind of a jack of all trades.
Very cool.
So he'll be a good interview.
All right, and then on Tuesday we're going to have the CEO of Bass, Mr. Bruce Aiken, live via Skype. And then on Wednesday, Matthew, no show this Wednesday because I got to go run on a treadmill and do other things for my heart. Anyway, next Wednesday, we're going to have a Sunline Hotline show. First one of the year.
Sunline Hotline.
Have you ever been in for a Sunline Hotline show?
No, I have not, but I have listened to some of them. They are quite interesting.
You should plan on being in for Wednesday so Brad could take some questions.
Yeah, Sunline Hotline show next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow. Our first one of the year, so looking forward to that. Should be very, very interesting next week with the guests that we have lined up. All right, I also want to say thank you to Trisha Milford, who is the PR media director for Major League Fishing, who got back with me very, very quickly on my request. And I'll give it up to her, man. She is top-notch. She does a great job over there. With questions that we have about stuff that's going on with Major League Fishing. So many thanks to that. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with Brandon Cobb here on a Tuesday. Everybody, stay tuned.
The ultimate fishing system starts with Lowrance HDS Live.
Upgrade to HDS Live with a ghost trolling motor, live sight transducer, or structure scan 3D, and get up to $500 cash back.
Yeah, you care about gear ratios, inches per turn, and ball bearings, but most importantly, you want reliability and dependability in the equipment you use. Luz doesn't cut corners when it comes to the gear they build. The new Speed Spool LFS is the best $99 reel in the market. Go see for yourself.
We've paired one of the most iconic hulls in the history of bass boats with a proven lineup of trusted accessories. We're bringing you best-in-class value and performance, leaving others in your wake. Turnkey value, turnkey performance. The Pantera 2 is an overachiever in the 19-foot category. Once you hit the throttle, you'll feel the rush, and there's no looking back.
Kevin, what are you doing here?
Oh, I'm just filling in for Billy.
I need 660 shad crankbaits in the Series 5 model.
We're out.
You're not out. You got all kinds of them right there.
We're out.
Kevin, I need six.
Have a lollipop.
I do not want a lollipop.
Have a lollipop.
Do you have it in sexy shad color?
At Duckett Fishing, we have assembled the top pros in the country to help us design rods to give you a competitive advantage.
Castability, strength, durability, action, sensitivity, weight and balance, and consistency.
Combine that with the best warranty in the industry, and you have rods that are pro-driven.
Duckett Fishing, pro-driven.
I want to share to you a new product we got coming out from Sunline. This is the FC leader size spools that we have now. We've gotten a lot of requests for this. A lot of you guys use fluorocarbon for leaders only, myself included. And one of the problems you have is when you have a 200-yard spool, that might last you 2, 3, 4 years. You might even lose it before you even get done with the spool. So we've gone to a little smaller spool. These are 50-yard spool sizes. You know, that way you're not holding your line on forever. You can keep your line fresh, use it when you can. Stores real easily in the boat. We got all of our popular line sizes that you're used to with our Sniper from 5 to 14 pound. If you guys are looking for a line that you're only tying for a leader, go check out Sunline FC Leader 100% fluorocarbon and give it a try.
Blue Water by TH Marine. Offering LED lighting solutions for your boat, trailer, truck, ATV, and so much more. Engineered and built to be rugged with waterproof and submersible options. Designed for easy installation, Blue Water is available in a variety of colors and styles. All backed by a limited lifetime warranty. Blue Water by TH Marine.
The name Spro says it all. Spro stands for sports professionals. When you look at the pro staff that Spro has brought on board over the past 15 years, it's been pretty incredible. I mean, one got it just then. From the development of the Rock Crawler to the McStick, from the Fat Papa to the Little John series, when you tie a Spro bait on, you know it's been designed by a professional to get the job done.
Meet AFCO's iCast award-winning Hydronaut waterproof system. Hydronaut features a 20K 100% waterproof shell, double dry cuffs to keep water out, speed vent hood engineered to prevent neck strain at high rates of speed. AFCO exclusive Cyclops tactical camera mount. Comfort Flex shoulder straps for all-day comfort. Outerwear that you can count on. The Hydronaut waterproof system by AFCO. Any fish, any water.
All of us on the Pro Tournament Trail use Gamigatsu hooks.
Why?
Because they are absolutely the best.
It's not about how many bites you get.
It's how many you put in the boat.
Gamigatsu makes hooks for every fishing style.
We didn't come this far to lose fish.
Did you?
For more information, visit gamigatsu.com.
The
The Big Bite Bait's Kamikaze Swim On is a very unique bait, and it's got a full body, but with ribs to give it a bigger profile, but not more plastic. It's got a jointed tail that gives it a lot of action, as well as this up and down crawl type trail with holes and ribs in it, so it creates a bubble trail almost. This bait is supposed to be fished upside down or vertical like this on a great for a chatterbait. I prefer it on a swim jig as well, but you can also cut it down and put it on the back of a finesse jig. You know, flip it around for some spotted bass or flipping docks. Anytime you want a small, compact, you know, little trailer for it, this is great for it. So check out the full lineup of swim-ons at BigBiteBaits.com.
All right, we are back on a Tuesday, and it is time for our special guest. Bradley, you all right, man?
Yeah, I'm all right. We're doing good. Had a little microphone issue here during the break.
That's all right. It's all good, man. All right, our next guest, two blue trophies, Matthew.
Yeah, in like the span of a month.
Weeks.
I mean, you look at how good he has been for so many years at FLW. It's amazing. He won like two BFLs, but he had 35 top 10s in 100 tournaments. Mm-hmm. And then he goes over to the Elite Series and he finally gets his two big trophies and had probably, I'd have to give Carl the moment of the year, but probably one of the top two or three moments of the year with that bedfish on Lake Fork.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Dude, mm-hmm. I mean, you want to know like what, and I don't know him that well. You know him a lot better than I do, but you want to know what his personality is like. Like, I ain't just going to be like, oh, that's well over 10 when I land it like that. Like, I'm going to be running around the boat and stuff. I remember he was on live talking with Zoda. He's like, there's another 10 pounder. And he's just like, hold on, let me lift this thing and then we'll continue. So, I mean, that's just kind of his personality. He just catches them and expects to catch them.
All right, let's bring him in. Brandon, you there, man?
I'm here.
All right, great to have you on the show. Thanks for taking time out. And
thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man, you have some interesting stuff behind you there. We'll get to that in a moment. But all right. a great start to the season in 2019, and then some things happen. And I really want to touch on kind of your review of 2019. It seemed like to me a roller coaster ride, but I want to hear your impression of your performance in 2019.
Yeah, so 2019 was a strange year for me because over my past 5-year career at FLW, I didn't really win, but I kind of made my career out of being consistent and doing pretty well consistently. And 2019 was not that at all, which I won two tournaments. You can't complain with two wins. But the rest of the year was – it started off about the standard I hold myself to. I mean, I think out of the first five tournaments, my worst finish was like 25th place or something like that. And, I think I had one kind of struggle, but then for the most part, it was pretty consistent. And then the second half of the year, really don't know what happened, just didn't catch them. But looking back, it wasn't necessarily that, like, I didn't do the completely wrong thing. There was just, like, one or two moments throughout every tournament at the end of the year. I'm like, man, that could have gone a lot differently, whether it was I was around the fish to do well and left or just lost some fish or something like that. It wasn't just completely missing it except maybe one tournament, and I just didn't capitalize the second half of the year. But it was a weird year, but in all, it was definitely a success with two wins.
All right, going into 2020, was there something or was there a characteristic about 2019 that you're going to carry over and learn from and apply to the 2020 season?
Man, I really don't. I don't feel like I fished any differently or had any different game plan in 2019. I kind of just carried about the same way as I have for the last few years. A few tournaments just lined up to my perfect scenario of my style. And I found the right thing in practice and keyed in on the right thing. So I really don't think I'll change anything or carry away. The one thing that 2019, I guess, gave me is that confidence to carry through and close a tournament out and win, which I've lacked in the past. I've had some opportunities to win, and just haven't quite put it together, whether it was on the final day or whatever. But that's one thing I kind of learned in 2019 was how to carry through.
Brandon, smallmouth bass have played a big role on the pro circuits in the past. It seems like, it, you know, mm-hmm. 3 or 4 years, there's more. You look at a lot of your finishes. I mean, the Carolinas isn't really known for their giant smallmouth bass, but I kind of went back through some of the tournaments that you had on FLW. You talked about that consistency, but I mean, you've struggled on Cumberland. You've had average finishes on St. Clair, struggled on Champlain, and then you look at the smallmouth finishes here with the 73rd on Cayuga, 52nd St. Lawrence River, 10 killers got smallmouth, St. Clair all below 30th place there. Do you struggle with smallmouth? Is that just kind of a anomaly there? Or is that something you got to really learn, especially considering half the dang season on the Elite Series now is a smallmouth deal?
Yeah, it's not necessarily – I have not done that well. St. Clair, I think I did okay one time. Average, I say. I got a check anyway. I've actually – found them decently at a couple tournaments. What I haven't learned with the smallmouth, which is kind of the same thing as Florida, what took me a while, it always seems like a lot of the boats are in a general area together. Mm-hmm. And it's something I've never figured out. When I do find some, get two or three bites, I never know, did I get two or three bites or did I find the area? And it's kind of what took me a while in Florida. And I'm kind of started putting together the Florida puzzle, and smallmouth to me is very similar to Florida fishing, to where you just find an area and grind it out. Not the style of fishing, but the way the fish position. You'll find a square acre or a mile even that's just got them. And if you don't realize that's the area that's got them, then it's hard to spend your time there.
Cobb, you kind of come from a part of the country where blueback herring, you're there at Hartwell and grew up. Did you go to Clemson? Is that right?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
So you spent a lot of time on Hartwell chasing blueback herrings, and you remind me a lot of a young Gagliardi, honestly, your style of fishing, your approach with some of the things that you guys do. To me, in fishing-wise, you guys from that part of the country seem to thrive in open spaces. And what I mean by that is it's like – it's not that the fish aren't on cover. They're generally structure related, but a lot of times it is suspended up off that structure. So you guys are very comfortable in fishing in open spaces, where a lot of guys where I come from, you know, they got to have a piece of wood to throw at. Expand on that. I'm surprised with the smallmouth, and I didn't realize Matt was going to go down that direction, but those fish do a lot of the same thing structure-wise, maybe not suspended, but very, very similar in those same areas. And I definitely agree with you on the fact that Florida and the northern smallmouth, you do seem to see the groups of boats on the spots.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing, I think the reason, the biggest difference between, like, smallmouth and our, like you're saying, our offshore kind of suspended, like, not around much type fish, the difference we have that's so hard for me, and the reason I fish through them a lot, is in the Carolinas, especially blueback herring lakes, there's just not many in one place. There may be a bunch, but you can't catch but a couple, and then they don't bite.
Right.
And so I tend to fish through somewhere really fast, and that's on purpose. That's my style, and it works here, but it's too easy to do like places like that where you don't want to leave. You don't want to fish through. You want to fish for them all day.
Yeah.
And I don't do that. So I fish through and catch three. Like, oh, I caught three. Well, around here, you caught three and you come back and catch three more, or you find more places or whatever. Up there, you caught three. It means you could have sat for 8 hours and caught 33.
Totally agree.
So that's just, that's just the difference.
All right, Brandon, I want to know a couple of things. One, I want to know, you had so much success last year, but I want to know, in your mind, what was your most memorable moment on the water in 2019? But more importantly, I want to know what your most memorable moment off the water was in 2019. Let's go with on the water first.
All right. So those are I've got two that jumped in my mind right when you said that. So on the water was 100% the final day at Hartwell this year. When I was leading, I had some Spectair boats following. I was running up Seneca River, which I fished who knows how many hours over the year. And I was running by Portman Marina, getting ready to go to the bridge, and looked back and saw the boats following me, looked over, saw my cameraman. And I remember making the exact same run with my dad fishing tournaments when I was like 11 and him driving.
That's awesome.
Running to the same parts of the lake. I'm like, man, I remember fishing old Five Lakes Fishing Club trail tournament with 30 boats going to this same spot I'm planning on heading to right now. And that was probably the most memorable on the water.
That was pretty cool. That was very cool.
It was neat because it's like literally every spot I fish in that tournament, I remember catching a fish in college or in when I was young fishing with my dad, whatever. It's just all that whole lake has a lot of history to me.
All right, what about off the water?
Off the water was that was probably this year at Gunnersville. It wasn't during the tournament. It was after weigh-in one day, and I was at the ramp, you know. I did pretty well at Gunnersville, kind of struggled last day, was kind of hooking my straps up on the boat, getting ready to leave, and a kid came up to me. I wish I knew his name. I'm not sure who it was, but a kid came up to me, probably high school aged, and was so excited to meet me. I mean, I've had a lot of fans in the past want to meet me, but this kid came up, his hands were shaking. He said, Mr. Brandon, will you sign my hat for me? And I gave him a couple hats out of my truck and signed his hat. But it was just cool to know that what we do as professional fishermen means so much to the fan base and to people that follow. You don't see it a lot and I had kind of a rough day that day, was ready to get out of there, and that kind of turned the day around. So that was probably one of the most memorable off the water moments.
You're sitting here with Brad Hallman, and I remember Brad talking. It's interesting. You're both of you guys made first major wins. You know, Brad won on his home pond on Grand in a Costa event a couple years ago. Your Elite Series win was on Hartwell. I remember, Brad, you were talking about, man, it seems I didn't know if it was ever going to happen at that level, and then it kind of gets easier after that. You've added two tour events. You won like a month later, a couple weeks later also. Is it easier to get the second one after you have one under your belt, do you think?
I don't know that I would call it easier. I think you learn to close a little bit, but like, you would think the pressure would go away kind of after you've won one. Like, you're like, okay, I know how to do this. But, like, I feel like the hardest thing to deal with when you're leading a tournament and chance to win is, like, that pressure the final day, especially if you're leading. You don't have anywhere to go but down. And the two I won was I was in the situation with a pretty big lead on it the final day. And that's kind of what's got me in the past is that like at FLW, I had a couple cups where I had a chance, yeah, and it's just that, like, it's hard to catch them the final day because it's just, I guess, some squirrels start running around in your brain real easy. I mean, you don't hold it together very easy. The thing that you know's worked for 3 days straight, if it doesn't work for 10 minutes, you start thinking, uh-oh, it's not working anymore. I got to go find something else. And you just don't have the patience that you had when you know how close you are.
So how do you keep the wheels on? I mean, we got a bunch of people listening who've been like, I've been there in the club championship. I've been there at a BFL. So, like, is there any way to practice that without being in that position and failing and learning from it?
Man, I wish there was, but looking back at what kind of kept me calm, I guess you'd say, it came down to one bite. That's what it came down to. Getting one bite at some point during the day to get you rolling and keep your confidence. Hartwell was a little different because I was 100% confident in what I was doing. It didn't matter if I didn't get a bite for 8 hours. At the end of the day, I was still going to say, well, that was the right thing. I just never ran into them. But, like, Fork was kind of a struggle for a little while, and I remember catching one 3-pounder. That one bite kind of got me on the right course of the day. But it's just paying attention to that one bite and keeping confidence in what you're doing, I think, is what it is. But I don't think there's any way to practice that. I'm sure sports psychologists would tell you something different, but in my mind, it's just keeping that positive thought and getting that one bite.
All right, from a business perspective, Brandon, having the two blue trophies that you earned last year, did that help you out from a sponsorship standpoint? Have you added new sponsors? Does winning promote dollar signs when it comes to sponsorship?
It's definitely helped me out some. Really, I pretty much, once I build a relationship with a company, I try to stay with them. So I've kept basically all the same sponsors I had before. we work together more closely now. Obviously, I became a little bit bigger name, so I mean a little bit more to them, and I can do a little more to promote them. The platform's helped me some, and I picked up a few new ones as well. I'm working with Mossy Oak Fishing this year and new rain suit company, Buck and Bass, out of California. And so it's definitely helped some, but I've kept most of the same relationships I had before.
These guys got you on, and they're talking about your wins, and they've kind of – this whole show's gone towards that. But I want to bring up something that's very obvious and been obvious for me for a long time, and I think is more impressive than your wins. Dude, your high level of consistency – you know, I pulled up to you the other day. We actually included that little conversation that you and I had after the first day in my little YouTube video when I dropped it. Your high level of consistency on a daily basis, dude, is incredible. You can go back and look, and that's what we were talking about, all the way back to your BFL days with all the top 10s, all the way through the Costas, through the FLW Tour, and now you're on the Elite Series. How do you maintain that edge every single day across the country?
Man, I really, that was, speaking of my season last year, that was what frustrated me the most about last season is, yeah, I had the success, but I didn't have that consistency. And looking back, I think one of the things that I do to stay consistent is people think I always find them maybe in practice, but dude, I have some of the worst practices, I swear. And what I end up doing is I fish for whatever I found, I fish for them. I mean, if I had three bites, I'm like, well, that's what I got. I'm going to fish for those three bites. And that's what I've always kind of made what's kept me consistent, I think, is not getting too stuck on what other people are doing or trying to
swing and chase something.
Yes, chase something the whole tournament. If I don't think I found the mother load, don't necessarily, I'm not saying don't go look, don't settle for mediocre, but don't go looking for the mother load if you've got something to catch a few. And that's kind of what I guess I didn't really change it, but I was in a unique opportunity where points didn't really matter last year.
Yep.
So if I didn't think I had found the winning fish, I didn't really go fish for just those three bites. And all the rest of my career, I've kind of banked on – I've learned to trust myself. If I find anything, it's usually a little bit better than I think it is because I downplay everything in my own mind. And I'm like, well, this one stretch of grass – wasn't very good, but I had three bites, and I don't think it's good going in the tournament, but then if I bear down on it, it's pretty good. And that's one thing I didn't trust myself on a few of those places last year, and some of the stuff I found, St. Clair was a prime example. I found the area which that tournament was a little weird because it didn't matter for me, and I couldn't move up in points enough to matter and couldn't drop enough to matter. So I was kind of mostly staying out of people's way there, but I found basically the three areas where other than Seth, he was on something special, but everybody else in the top 30, I found those three areas and I never made a cast on in the tournament.
You talk about that consistency. I mean, you had a stretch there for like 6 years where you had like 20 top 10s in BFLs.
This is a future AOY guy.
Out like of
multiple,
40.
Multiple AOY guy is what he is.
Right. So it's just comes across like watching you fish and how you've done. Like you're a pretty simple guy on the water. Like it seems like you stick to just kind of a handful of baits. I mean, do you carry a bunch of stuff or do you rely primarily on just two or three different things that you know are going to work and roll with that?
No, I do. I do carry a lot of. I carry a decent amount of tackle on the boat, probably too much at times. But realistically, if I'm gonna catch them, it's usually on pretty simple baits. I mean, I don't get too technical, like with a bunch of different all new techniques and things like that come out. I'm not much on the bandwagon type new deal stuff. So yeah, I keep it pretty simple. I mean, your jig, your worm, your rattle vibe, your crankbait, I mean, pretty simple.
All right, on the instant feedback, Kyle in South Carolina wants to know, what can you say about back in the day with the, is it Palmetto State Bassmasters?
Or Palmetto?
Palmetto?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think that was a club I fished some when I was, that's probably a few of those Hartwell tournaments I was talking about back in the day, fishing when I was young, 12 to 14 years old. I definitely remember fishing that club some.
All right, Rick in North Carolina wants to know, how much information do you share with Shane LeHue?
100%. Me and Shane, we work together. If if I get one bite and I think it means something, I tell them about it. And it works most of the time. The small situation where we can potentially mess each other up is it's helped us out more than it's hurt. But like a few of those, you know, I was talking earlier, those three bites might mean something. Well, if that's all I got confidence in it. But then a lot of times I'll listen to Shane and might try something I normally wouldn't do because of that. But then some of those tournaments where I truly got nothing, then it's good to have him to lean on, and then vice versa. I mean, I think like Florida last year, neither one of us called anything in practice, and I found five or six on bed and said, well, heck, let's just both go start there. And we both caught over 20 the first day. Wow. So it's helped a lot. The stipulations we always have, it works real well. If we find a truly special spot, like we think, like I might can win off this place, then we don't share those tight places. But other than that, we pretty much share everything we got.
All right, Jake in Ohio wants to know, when did you discover the chatterbait being from South Carolina?
So the chatterbait is actually a funny story about that. The guy that invented the chatterbait, Ron Davis, pretty sure that was his name, he was a tennis coach in Greenwood. And when I was about 8 years old, maybe nine, my mom was taking tennis lessons from him. He gave me a brown paper bag of a prototype bait he was trying to get a patent on and thinking about producing. So I had some of probably what was the original chatterbaits, and I caught them in a pond on it when I was like 10 years old. And I wish I still had those original ones, but I don't. So I was probably one of the first persons ever. This was prior to all them catching them at Toho and the Classic. This was prior to them even being a bait. And I had a few way before that.
Wow.
He's got to go watch that documentary we did on it.
Yeah, we actually did a documentary, one of our 20 Feet Deep documentaries on the chatterbait. You need to check it out. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I had no idea when I had that. I had a white and a black and blue and I think a chartreuse one at the time that was like do it mold poured and, you know, made like that. And I had no idea they'd turn into what they are this day.
Wow. What a great story. What are your thoughts on 2020, Brandon?
Man, I'm excited to get started. There's a few there's a few tournaments that are kind of similar, like St. John's, for instance. We're going about the same time as last year, and then some of the northern tournaments about the same time as last year. There's a few tournaments. I like a big, diverse swing from year to year just to go in the tournaments completely fresh. And I feel like there's some you got to kind of be wary of because we are going so close to the same time, and we went there last year near the same time, like St. John's. Completely different weather conditions, but we're going about the same week, which is those tournaments can be tough because it's hard to forget what happened last year even though it's different weather. Mm-hmm. So it's gonna be an exciting year, but it's gonna be, you have to be careful with a few of them.
All right, still running a Falcon boat?
I am.
All right, yep, Dave. Exactly so. All right, Dave wants to know, what's the best thing that you like about that boat?
The best thing I like about my Falcon has got to be the rough water running, like the handling in rough water. I was at St. Clair last year, and I don't run in rough water, and ever. I mean, we don't really get that in South Carolina. And to be perfectly honest, I had never really been in it until St. Clair last year, like truly, I'm talking truly rough water. And that boat handled the St. Clair 7-footers better than anything I've ever been in. I have yet to spear a wave in a Falcon boat. Ever in my life.
One of the things we haven't touched on is you have never fished in a Bassmaster Classic, I don't believe, have you?
Nope, never been.
Won't be able to say that here in a month or two. So, I mean, dude, you got to be pretty jacked on it. You weigh in 114 pounds on Lake Fork. You know how to catch the big ones, and you're going to Gunnersville.
I am excited about Gunnersville. That's a cool time of year to go there, too. What I like about that tournament that I'm so excited about, too, is that week – dude, no matter how well you know Gunnersville, like a lot of people do, I don't know it that well, but a lot of people in the field do, that time of year is such a transition time that that's mm-hmm. going to be like a fly by the seat of your pants. Mm-hmm. It could be 70 degrees. It could be snowing in 30. We got no idea. Yeah. And that's what I love about that tournament. I think until we actually get out there for the tournament, even the practice the week before is not going to tell you exactly what to do. That tournament's going to be, it's going to be a cool changing tournament like that.
All right, Andy in Indiana wants to know what is it like catching the biggest bass you ever caught live on Bassmaster Live.
Man, I'll never forget it. And it's honestly probably good that I didn't know it was going to be the biggest bass I ever caught until I got in the boat, because I probably broke it off, slacklined it, dropped my rod in the water. Something like that. But it was, it didn't even really register to me that it was the biggest bass I've ever caught until I had it in my hands. The whole time I was fighting it, I knew it was a giant, but I didn't even register until I was holding it.
All right, Matthew, anything else?
Yeah, I want him to show some stuff.
Yeah, I want to see what's in the containers behind you, man.
Oh, God, what just happened?
No,
you're good.
Oh, it's all good. You're just a little crooked. There you go.
Why can I see?
We can see you. Y'all. We're good.
Oh, there we go. All right, so what are we looking at? We got Zoom. We got all of them labeled. There's California 420 Speedworms. Some flukes. That's what all these... boxes or Zoom.
How many flukes do you have? The South Carolina guys go through flukes.
Flukes and spooks is like
30
deal.
Of every color. Yeah.
do you do the boil the tail and salt them and soften them and make sure they're just dead nuts, perfectly straight and all that stuff, or you just take them out of the pack and put them on?
Yeah, so I boil them if I'm fishing them for like herring eating fish, like real fast, like herring eating related. Like topwater fishing, I guess you'd say, like the cane pile, brush pile thing.
Yeah.
But I do not if I'm just typically throwing them.
For everybody else in the country, they have no clue what boiling a fluke is, right? Like zero. Yep. Explain the boiling process, because you know it's like a science. You've got it down to the water temperature and how many minutes.
Yeah. So basically, all you do is, like, your main thing, you're trying to make them a little softer, but you're also trying to make them not crooked. Like, just the nature of a soft plastic, you put it in a bag, let it sit for a year, it's crooked. And so you just take it, boil some water, take your fluke with some tongs or something, dip it in the boiling water for about 5 to 10 seconds, not that long. Dip it in, hold it for just a second, pull it out, and lay them flat on a paper towel. And then I'll take them and put them back in the bag perfectly straight. What that does, it makes them softer, so they wiggle a little better, makes them wiggler like a herring,
right?
That's what I say. And then it makes them straight, obviously,
right?
The thing is about doing that, somebody at home sitting there thinking, I've done this before, you're like, oh, I'm gonna go boil all my flukes, get them awesome. Well, yeah, they'll be straight, but they only stay soft for like a little while.
Really?
And then they go back. So they're not as good. You gotta boil them kind of
the night before. The night before, yeah. You're in there boiling. So it's mandatory that you're staying somewhere on a blueback herring lake that you have a stovetop in the house.
So, yeah, I don't do it a lot. I used to do it on all of them because I thought it made a huge difference. But honestly, like a blueback herring lake, you fish them so daggum fast. The biggest thing is you just want them straight.
Right.
And that's how you can straighten them out, because they just don't – they'll twist your line and they don't kick right if they're not straight. That's the main
– Salt or no salt in that recipe?
No salt.
No salt. Okay.
That's all.
Brad's learning.
Yeah.
I've learned.
Which I boil anything. Like my horny toads, if I get crooked ones, a lot of people think I always have – everybody that throws a horny toad knows it's one of the most fish-catching baits in the world, but you'll get an old crooked leg that don't swim right.
Yeah.
So what I do is I keep a bag in my boat and throw all my crooked legs in there, and then I'll go boil them and fix them when I get home.
That's awesome.
There you have it. All right, Brandon, man, we greatly appreciate you taking time out. What's the wrap going to look like this year?
It is actually completely different. I got my Mossy Oak blue on there. I got some gray. It's probably the brightest truck and boat I've ever had, which is not fit my normal style, but it's pretty good looking. I got it. I'm actually cleaning it up today. I'm going to make a post on social media, so if y'all check my Instagram and Facebook out, probably later on today it'll be posted up there.
All right. There you have it. All right, man. Wish you the best of luck in 2020. Looking forward to seeing you at the Classic, man.
Thank you. I'm very excited to go. Thank you all for having me on.
All right, man. Take care.
Have a good one.
See you, Brandon. Right.
There you have it. Brandon Cobb. And, his first Classic.
Dude,
totally forgot about that.
We expect big things from him. He's performed at a high level at the big stage before, twice on the Cup, with a shot to win going into the last day. So it would not surprise me one bit to see him in the top elite six. What do they call it at the very
super six?
Super six.
I remember. So he started fishing the tour, the Tackle Warehouse Pro Circuit. What do you want me to call it now? That the Pro Circuit in 2014. And I remember he was going to be a rookie, and that was back when I was pounding out 3 articles a day, and I didn't have a girlfriend, and I spent 6 hours going through stats of BFL guys to try to find the next one.
Yeah.
And I come across this guy, and like you look at like from 2008 to 2014, look at it, he had 1, top 10, 2, 2, 4, 1, 3, 2, 2, 2. Those aren't the number of tournaments he fished. Mm-hmm. Those are the number of top 10s he had in it.
Right.
And you look at his earnings, and I just called him up, and I was like, hey, man, you're going to be a rookie. And, like, you, like, always catch them. Like, what? like always catch them.
He is one of the most consistent anglers out there right now today, and especially at his age. And he's incredible. I mean, he's going to have an AOI trophy.
Yeah. Listen, to, like, in 2010, he fished his 5. He won the Savannah River Division. He had finishes of 7th, 9th, 3rd, 10th, and 25th.
Yep.
And he did it year after year after year. And that's a very competitive division out there. I know their numbers had been down in recent years.
I'm telling you, he performs well on the big stage. I mean, it's not going to surprise me. He's going to be a favorite at the Classic.
Dude, do you think a guy like that does he have some natural ability to catch fish? Did something click early on? How does that happen?
He's got that deal where he has spent his life on the water.
Yeah, but
too. He surrounds his – it's the same type of situation. He surrounds himself with nothing but fishermen. And I mean fishermen, not guys talking about it. I'm talking about guys doing it. And that's what he's done his whole life. Shane LeHue, they've kind of got that network thing down. He's part of that group where they network. And when he says 100%, he means 100%. Here's all my ways for practice. Here's all my waypoints from practice. You need to stop and catch them on the way in. There's a school sitting right there by takeoff.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys make sure that they catch them.
All right, on the instant feedback, Matt, Dave asked about the Falcon. He also wants to know about the Basscat Lynx. What's the best thing that you like about the Lynx?
You can have a guy in the back doing, like, a heavy workout routine, and you don't even know someone's back there. Like, the stability on that thing, and then especially the last couple months, it's got that big center compartment storage. It kind of opens up like a coffin lip, and I actually don't put my rods in that, but when you've got a really cold morning, and then you've got 5 different layers on, you've got a helmet, you've got gloves, like, there's nowhere to put that stuff in, like, a normally set up. Like, it's a pain in the butt. You're tripping over it. Man, you can just pop that thing up, toss the helmet in there, toss all your clothes. I really like the open. Yeah. It's like a concept storage locker.
We should mention for all the guys that are in Arkansas, Oklahoma, Missouri, the Tulsa Boat Show is going on from right now until this weekend.
That's this week?
Yeah, they're all going to be out there. I know the Bass Tank guy, Sookup's going to be out there. He's got a booth, and all the boats will be there to look at.
And like I said, I mean, I've had several people that have texted or messaged me about the Lynx because they knew that I've run a couple different of the models.
Yeah.
You know, we ran the Puma last year and stuff. So, man, you guys have any questions or anything? If you're in the area too, man, we can go fishing.
Matt
you
is
go
not check scared. It out. Matt is not scared to take you crappie fishing. Like, he just needs a reason and excuse
He's
to
obsessed,
go.
Obsessed,
crappie.
Man. He is obsessed.
I went yesterday.
He came in here telling us a story. Tell us.
Yeah.
Tell us.
Yeah. So I went yesterday. I went to a Trophy Lake because my boat was. Whoa! I just threw a pen at Brad.
All right.
So my boat was at the Oklahoma City Boat Show.
Yeah.
So I went and picked it up from Scott Dennis there at S&D and Shawnee, and there's a little Trophy Lake around there. So I decided to ease in there, and it's like one of those deals. It's like, you know, you're not going to catch a bucket full of crappie. You might catch a big one, though. And I saw 2, you know, the electronics in like 5-6 hours of doing this. And I chased one of these stupid crappie around for 35 minutes and made about 200 drops at him. And then all of a sudden, he just sunk off into the abyss. It was a 3-pounder for sure. 3-pound crappie.
He's a trophy hunter. Trophy crappie hunter. And addicted, Mark. Addicted.
And caught nothing. Zero.
No, I caught a 4-inch crappie. 1 4-inch crappie. That was it the entire day.
Did you chase that one? Was that one that you chased? Or did it just happen?
No, I was looking for a bigger one, and my line was dangling in the water. And I was like, oh, I got one.
You and John, you guys keep doing this. I'm gonna reinvent the crappie fishing. We're going to make a swim bait for those things you guys are chasing and quit dropping the jig.
You're obsessed.
But I was able to stay on it. If you remember, I went on a rant last month about how I can see them, but then I can't stay on them, and I can't drop on them, and I can't.
You're
so then
improving.
Remember, last month I came in, and I was like, oh, my God, I figured out how to follow them. I figured, and now I'm following one for 30 minutes. So it's And I don't, like I said, I was hoping Mark Davis would be like, oh man, if you can crappie fish, you'll catch them every bass tournament. Like I thought, I was hoping there'd be something with, were you?
That
Mark Davis would be like, oh man, your finesse game is going to be so on point. And he's like, nah, you're kind of wasting your time, but it's fun.
He doesn't know what you're doing with the electronics, though, as far as how you're chasing them. So I do see where they would relate and make you stronger.
All right, real quick, I did receive a couple of emails and a couple of messages. They wanted to know how Chris Prather did in Shawnee at the PBA event, the PBA bowler that we had on with Jimmy Houston. He finished seventh. He barely missed the TV show. But interestingly enough, I get a text from him yesterday, and you know what he was doing today? Today's an off day with a practice session this afternoon.
Where are they?
Arkansas.
Oh, what's he doing?
The place that they're staying at, I guess they have a VRBO or a whatever. It has a pond right by there. He was asking me questions about what he should do and the whole chatterbait thing. He was going fishing at the pond.
Awesome. Why is he asking you? Jimmy Houston gave him his number.
Dude, I don't know.
Jimmy was quick, too, to swap numbers. I'll swap numbers with you.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine what his phone list is like,
That's
though?
What he said. He said, man, he goes, I don't have any friends on the Pro Bowling Tour anymore. They've all retired. He's like, now I got one on the Pro Bowling Tour. He's like, I got one on the golf tour. I got one in baseball. I got one in football.
Check
I got one in the bowling
off,
tour.
You know when he runs with all the NASCAR guys?
I got one in darts.
Jimmy's not stopping.
I got
man.
The pro croquet in the body.
We got to going yesterday off air, and it was really funny.
It was pretty funny.
We had a good time with it.
Is he the most hooked up guy in the industry?
Who?
Jimmy.
He's got to be.
Who's the most hooked up guy you think?
He said he'd been with every president since, who did he say? Nixon, basically?
I don't know.
It was.
I'm not going to say it.
Wait, what were you going to say?
I'm not going to say it.
I'm missing it.
Since what president?
Nixon.
I think it was before that.
Oh, my gosh. You guys, you can't do inside jokes on the show.
That's all right.
You have to let the people in.
We were just having a fun time.
We're just having a good time. Anyway,
it's not about Nixon. It's just,
No. So,
he is the most hooked up ever.
He is, absolutely.
I was talking about President Nixon.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Let's move on. Let's move on.
Do you have any? Do you? I mean, you're a pro angler. You've won. You've been around it. You go to boat shows. You meet. Do you have any?
No.
You don't have any of those contacts where it's like a dude who's in NASCAR or a dude who's a major league. You don't have any just because they're like, oh, dude, I'm going to be able to go out
dude,
with a
I'll
pro
I'll show
fisherman.
You my contacts. The guys on my contact have names like Hillboy, Tater. Come on, seriously.
I'm just saying, I mean, you know, you get in a lot
Hillboy.
Of positions where guys want to go fishing, and they're like, you're a pro angler. Here, let me give you my number. Like Randy Moss has gotten hooked up with a bunch of different guys, and Alan Jones has gone, you know, Colt McCoy and that whole type
President
of thing.
President Bush.
Yeah, I mean, a bunch of those. But
yeah, no.
No.
Like, you're not tight with Toby?
No. Watched him play one night down in McLean County at Crawford's, or not Crawford's, but whatever the chicken fry place is down there. He walked in on Friday night.
Libby's?
Yeah, Libby's.
He walked into Libby's?
Dude. Legendary night.
On the patio?
Yeah, Goldsby. Up on the patio in Goldsby.
Are you kidding
me? Been out playing golf with his buddies. Heard they had a good chicken fry. Stopped by. And it was on a Friday night, and they had two guys. That was their live band. My wife and I were there last Friday night. Anyway, we were there, and my wife and I were there. We're just having dinner, meeting with some friends. The live band was playing. The two guys with their guitars.
Fry the damn quails.
Yeah, and Toby's sitting at the table with these other guys and their wives and Toby's wife, and they're having a few beers and eating chicken fried steaks and talking. And you could tell the two guys were uncomfortable. You know, because they realized that Toby Keith was sitting
It's like flipping laydowns while Brad watches you.
Toby doesn't leave. People are dancing and stuff. Wife's feeling good. So she and I are on the dance floor dancing. And next thing I know is Toby gets up and walks up and talks to the two gentlemen. He pulls up a stool and says, I don't want to play any of my music. I want to play y'all's and play with you. He sat there for probably 3 hours till closing time and played and closed that place.
Wow.
Never left. And it was incredible.
That's a great story.
There probably wasn't 75
How
people
long ago
in there.
Is this?
A couple years ago.
Wow. See, I used to go out there after. So we would fish the Wednesday night jackpot on Thunderbird. And then I kept my boat out there at the Goldsby deal. So I dropped my boat off, and then all my buddies would be out there on the patio, and the damn quails would be playing. And we'd go Wednesday, and they'd have a bucket of beer waiting. Yeah. And you get back at like 11. It was every Wednesday.
Yeah.
And I'd pay for the beers if I placed in the Derby.
Yeah.
So they'd all be like, did you catch him? Did you catch him? Did you catch him?
It's awesome.
Nice. Yeah, I wish I could have chicken fry
that's
now.
A great, that's not a great, on the
great
list.
Story. It was a great evening.
Who do not you, on you the have list. Anyone famous in your Rolodex, Mark?
Oh, you know he does.
Ah, there's a few in there.
Who's
he
your...
just called in a professional bowler the other day.
Yeah, but
why
they just met.
This?
They met the day before.
It's in his Rolodex.
Like your bowl. Okay, don't go through. But on the top end bowling, what's the biggest bowling name that you could call up right now?
Probably Chris Prather.
I mean, how do you beat that?
I mean, yeah, probably him. Now, who is...
Oh, you got the dude from Oklahoma that, like, your kids went to school with. He's big.
Who?
That dude who's, like, does college football stuff, doesn't he?
I don't know. I've Joe Castiglione.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. That guy. That's big. They talk about him on ESPN all the time. Yeah.
Who's the NASCAR driver?
Oh, you got NASCAR driver.
Yeah.
Now you're getting up there.
I got
got any NBA players?
No.
No NBA players.
I do have a NASCAR driver. I don't remember who it is. Which, though.
For Joe Gibbs?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, but I don't
Martin
remember.
Martin Truex?
That's what I was going to say, Truex.
Let me look here real quick.
That's who Dove's pretty tight with.
Yeah. He's the one who was spot.
Martin Truex.
Oh, yeah, don't call that.
Good right guess. Now. Good guess.
It's good because he, it. Well, he was sponsored by, by Bass for several events and then had a great year.
Yeah. So anyway.
I think the Zaldanes are buddies with him too.
With Truex.
Yeah. Yeah. Big NASCAR fans.
All right, so that's going to wrap up the week because I am off. If you want to blame anybody that the fact that we only have two shows this week, blame the doctor because tomorrow's the only day that I could get in to do all of these tests that I have to do because of my heart.
I'm blaming the 1,000 hamburger patties from 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's definitely a contributor,
too. We did have four
too.
Last week, though. So
we had four last week, and then next week, as I mentioned earlier in the show, great week next week. We're going to have Ryan Salzman on Monday, Bruce Aiken on Tuesday, and then the Sunline Hotline show on Wednesday.
What do you do? So. You don't fish for like 3 months. Like your next one's
I've got plenty on my agenda, I promise. It is kind of my off season, but I've got a new boat that's been sitting for a month and a half that I need to go get, bring in, swap out from my old. I've got plenty to do.
All right, very cool. Once again, I want to thank everybody for the reviews on iTunes. We surpassed 1,000. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to take the giveaway. If you want to continue to go ahead and do a review on iTunes, you can. We will make the announcement on the Sunline Hotline show next Wednesday on who the winner is. How about that, Matthew?
That works.
All right, so awesome. Continue to review and rate us on iTunes. Continue sending feedback. Love hearing from everybody. And we will return on Monday. Bradley, thanks for being here. As always, you are welcome anytime here. Enjoy Matthew, have fun chasing the crappie, man.
I'm going bass fishing this weekend.
All right.
I told someone, I said, listen, I said, at some point, I got to go back to catch a bass. And it's going to take me 3 or 4 days to get back into it because right now it's a foreign concept.
I know.
All right, man. Well, be careful. All right, everybody out there, be safe. That's it. We're out of here.